Welcome to the OneUp Sales Development Podcast, a podcast for new and emerging revenue leaders, whether you're in sales, marketing, or customer success. We're here for one thing and one thing only, to drive revenue. This one goes out to all the hustlers out there on the phones, each and every day, slugging it out. Whether you're adding net new logos, expanding revenue from your sales base, or renewing existing accounts, it's all about working as one cohesive team towards one cohesive goal.
Cross-functional sales team!
So if you're new and you want to be a top funnel sales dev strategist, then you better put in the work and act like one. Digital marketing, act like one. Customer success, act like one. To be the bro, act the role. I'm your host, Jackson Lill, a top funnel revenue growth leader and an everyday frontline practitioner. This podcast is brought to you by the SDU community, Sales Dev Unite.
SDRs Unite!
Thank you for tuning in and enjoy the show. Two, one. Nikki Ivey, welcome to the OneUp Sales Development Podcast.
Thank you. I'm so very excited to be here.
Oh my goodness, Nikki. Thank you so much for coming on. You know, we've been following you for a very, very long time. We as in me too, myself. And you are just a pioneer in the game. Not just anyone who's just out there doing it to do it, but you're out there with a specific purpose. You have a why. And your bio says it all. And, you know, that's something that I'm really happy and proud to bring you on. Also to share some insights for the new individual SDR and BDRs to come on board, you know, some AEs, whatever. But welcome to the OneUp Sales Development Podcast. We appreciate you being here. How are you doing today?
I'm doing my best today. Yeah. I am a couple things, right? So I'm a first time sales leader. I'm director of sales at Assembly. Which we'll get into here in a minute, but it's a seed stage startup. So for that to be one's sort of first shot or first experience, it can be a lot, right? To learn at once, because it's an entirely different set of responsibilities, concerns, sets of information that you wouldn't have been privy to as an IC. So I got all of that going on. You and I just discussed, I am recovering from the coronavirus, likely the Delta variant, because I am fully vaxxed. And that sort of has caused another set of complications, really with just respect to work, right? And I guess a lot of people are probably negotiating that. We're already into a conversation, aren't we? Look at that. when you work from home, right, and you feel like you're always at work, then calling into work when you're actually sick can be kind of tricky. And I'll tell you how it went for me was like on Friday being like, you know what? I think I'm coming down with something. Well, Thursday, I think I'm coming down with something. So maybe won't be as available tomorrow. And then the next day went to all the meetings and still did that. So, I mean, it is something that, you know, I wasn't as intentional about before, but now that I know, like, I have to really pay attention to how I treat myself in this work from home situation.
Yeah, and thank you for being open about that. Yeah, no, I like to take a stab at it real quick, because, you know, there's like, and this is off topic. A lot of people talk about, you know, see this, see that. There's a lot of anti-vaxxers, anti-maskers, and really, it's this kind of thing where you could say all the things you want, but by the time it's too late and then you kind of want to turn around, it's kind of like, oh shit, I already messed up, it's too late. How are you handling? I mean, is it, you're fully vaccinated, but you kind of in there, you're a warrior about it, and you look glamorous for someone who has COVID. I was like, say what? Nikki got COVID. She's glowing.
You're
glowing, girl.
Oh, hold on. Let's just get into it. I'm going to tell y'all where this comes from, right? So as most of you know, Nikki is short for Shaniqua. Shaniqua was born in the Hilltop Housing Projects of Dayton, Ohio. And I was born to a woman named Octavia. And my mom, some of my earliest memories would be me looking up to her. She's only like 5 feet tall. Looking up to her, and she'd be like feather in her hair, and she'd have on like cute little red shorts and some little candies. And this was all just to go to the corner store. So I say that to say this, Tavie's baby, gonna have an outfit. It just started the tradition of looking outwardly the way that I want to feel on the inside, and then letting that be just one of the things that gets me out of bed, or just one of the things that, you know, gives me that extra push when things inevitably get difficult.
Yeah, presenting yourself, and just, you know, there's also a saying that how you do anything is how you do everything. And, you know, it's funny because recently after, and of course, I'm not going to say too much, I just started to say, hey, look, ever since I'm going to start recording now that this has become a professional podcast, I'm going to dress a certain way. And even going outside sometimes, you know, my cousin's like, why are you dressed like that? You work at home. I was like, it's just the way I do things now. And it kind of just reflect what you just said, Nikki. Right? It's just how you do anything. It's how you do everything.
And by the way, I don't know if this is just audio podcast or if you guys are going to get video.
Oh, it's video too.
Jackson here is, he is snazzy. I mean, there's the jacket situation, the hair is coiffed. Like, don't let me get all the shine on the glamour here.
Oh, thanks, Nikki. I appreciate you, but you're the real star here. I'm just the host. This is your show. This is your show. Right. Well, Nikki, let's just dive right in for a few moments here. I've been following you a very long time. So let's talk about SDR Defenders. This is a huge for the community itself. You know, during that time when pre-COVID is happening, bam, SDR Nation came out. Bam, SDU came out. But SDU is just privately owned. That's, you know, shameless plug is on me. But then, bam, we've got SDR Defenders. How did you guys come across with this idea and collaborating? I know it was with Kyle Coleman and I'm our good boy, Josh Roth. Talk to us about the origin there, please.
It's one of my favorite stories, right? So like a lot of us in, what was it, March or April of 2020, I was a salesperson out of work. And I started to think about, you know, the next time I enter the sales workforce, I want to be sure that I'm entering a place where the culture is something that is supportive of, you know, not only, you know, me and my professional goals, but respect the role to begin with, right? Am I going to a place that really respects salespeople, or is this going to be, you know, an exploitative turn and burn type situation? Because frankly, we saw a lot of that, right? A lot of folks in their pivot slash scramble to address what was happening during COVID, right? The pressure release valve was just to fire the sales team. And that felt impersonal to a lot of us. It felt like, you know, it made a lot of people feel expendable. And so that's when I started thinking about, you know, how to head off some of those things, right? What are some of the things, some of the red flags that I ignored in these work environments that if I start to talk about, maybe other folks won't have to go into those environments. And so I made this post about something that was said to me in an interview, right? I'd asked this gentleman, you know, how is, you know, what percentage of the team is hitting quota? And he was like, none of them.
God.
And I was like, well, yeah. And so I was like, well, when folks are failing, you know, what do you do to help them? And he was like, well, we just fired all of the shitty poor performers. That's the direct quote.
Oh, no.
So I should have run the other direction. But you know what? Sometimes a sister needs a job. Like, I'm not going to sit here and play games with you guys. I could talk until I'm blue in the face about all the things, all the rigors you put an organization through when you're trying to vet them. And that is all well and good if you have the time, if you have that as a luxury. But I have been multiple times in my life in a situation where that just wasn't available to me. So no, I didn't run the opposite direction when this person said that, but I never forgot what he said. And I never forgot how that ended up being a through line for my experience there. So anyway, I write this post about it. Josh Roth comments and says, you know, this is a great post. I think we think about this the same way. I'm DMing you now. Oh. And that is, yeah, that's the genesis of SDR Defenders, right? And so he does DM me, and then Tom Bogard and Kyle Coleman are involved, and Nisha Parikh, who is our marketer, and frankly, right, the person who keeps our stuff together. And we did that and built this community, and more than that, right, started building this awareness around how we treat, yes, SDRs and prospecting reps, but broader than that, anybody entering the sales profession. Are we socializing these people in a way that is going to produce healthy pipeline for the future leaders of the profession? And so that was why we took a content first approach to it. And then it kind of worked out, right? So we recently got acquired. We got acquired by Pavilion.
Oh, snap. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank
I didn't
you.
Catch that.
Shit. Yeah. So Pavilion was formerly Revenue Collective.
Yeah.
And so now that we've been acquired by them, it really just supercharged the scope of what we're able to do to that end. And it started to broaden, right? Just folks in the first 5 years of their career, because that was a demographic that many of you may know that previously Revenue Collective hadn't quite tapped into, right? It was more of director or above level. And I love that. Now that I am in a director of sales role, I'm in Pavilion, I completely appreciate and understand why that happened. And I also though appreciate why they were looking to see, again, how are we building that pipeline? Right. And they identified correctly that it starts with how we treat people in their first 5 years of their career. So the exciting part, and I'm going to send you this information so that everybody listening has access to this.
Yeah, please.
So now that it's called an analyst community, we haven't quite launched it yet, but inside scoop here is
inside scoop.
Yeah. Inside you heard scoop. It here first. The inside scoop is that folks who were or are SDR defenders or are, you know, have that inside scoop will enjoy certain discounts in terms of getting into the new Pavilion, formerly Revenue Collective group, and also discounts on the classes that are offered through that community. I am so excited about it. We have about 4,000 folks who are members at SDR Defenders. And if all 4,000 of those folks could find the resources and access to mentorship that exists in this new Pavilion iteration of SDR Defenders, it would just make me so happy.
Oh, shit. Oh, yes. Okay, hold on. Let me just put it here, be the first personally, well, not the first, but, you know, very, very, very familiar with SDR Defenders, Revenue Collective as well. They pivoted and they just got recently funded too as well. Is that correct? Pavilion?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you know, when you get funding, that means business, you know, things going to roll out. Nikki, dude, congratulations. 4,000 member. That's strong. That's strong. Strong. Really strong. Yep. So what we're hearing is for SDR Defender, basically you guys came out with the right approach to say, hey, we're basically letting everyone and anyone knows that anyone can be an SDR, a BDR, regardless of how old they are, where they came from, educational background, and you're acting as a liaison to basically ramp them the correct ways and kind of guide them to get them where they ought to be at, right? Rather than,
that's,
you know,
right.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. And getting acquired. Damn, gee.
You know what you remind me of?
Yeah.
This enthusiasm. Do you watch Drink Champs with Noriega?
No. It rings a bell, though.
It's rappers, and most of them old school rappers, but it's rappers, and they're like taking shots and like telling old story, inside stories about experiences that they have with like famous rappers, but the host, Nori, right? He's like a really, he's super enthusiastic about other people's success. So like every 5 minutes, he's like, go ahead and give a round of applause.
Oh, no, like I want to check that out. It was, was Joey Diaz on there? I seen Joey Diaz sometimes. That guy's like, I don't know. He's like, Joey Diaz. No.
Probably, but I don't remember his name. Yeah. You kind of get caught up in Nori when you watch that.
Yeah.
I don't know if your listeners watch any of
them. No, girl, I'll be your biggest cheerleader. I'll be cheering in the stands for you. Yeah, all day. Nikki, so once you get to know you a little bit on a personal level here, were you born and raised in Ohio? Was that right? Is that you said?
In Ohio? I was born there, yes. The reason I mention the Hilltop Housing Projects of Dayton, Ohio, I say it that way all the time. my parents grew up there across the street from each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was from a family of all girls. My grandma had like 11 kids, right? And it was all girls and just a couple boys. My dad, the opposite. Mostly boys and just one girl. And so, you know how when people are kids, right? Boys fight girls all the time and it's like this whole thing. And then somewhere out of that, there came this love story between my parents. And that is really what I come from. It was very constitutive of me.
Yeah.
At the same time, though, I think what was formative on top of that is that my dad ended up getting in the Army. So I moved from Dayton when I was 5. We moved to Fort Lewis, Washington, which is just outside Tacoma in the Pacific Northwest. Yeah. And I lived there from first grade on through the summer before I started high school. So technically that's where I grew up. And then I went to high school in Southeast Georgia. So I moved all the way across the country.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
It was a real culture shock. Just because, here's another like through line to like why my personality is the way it is, why I care about the things I care about. But, you know, growing up on Army bases, it's pretty diverse, right?
Yeah.
Really
yeah.
diverse, especially where we were. I mean, because you're getting people from different small towns, right? People joining for different reasons, right? And then those young people traveling to other countries and falling in love in those other countries and then starting families of all these different beautiful compositions, right? That's what I thought the world was like, that harmony that I experienced as a child. Then I moved to Southeast Georgia and this was not the case. So it took some getting used to, and I had Jackson, you know, I think I had a choice to make, you know, am I going to, in the name of fitting in the name, because it's tough. I was 14 years old. I was 14 as a freshman in high school. And we all want to be liked and we all want to fit in. But at the same time, right, like it just, people self-segregated there. It was just the way. And I wasn't comfortable with that. So I was just a choir and drama nerd. I kind of kept to myself. And I didn't really have a lot of friends in high school, which might, I think, too, have helped me understand the importance of community, the importance of feeling included, and the importance of getting a sense of belonging, the impact that can have on you for the rest of your life and in other avenues of your life. So that was that. I was, and there's a lot of cliche in there too, right? So I shouldn't leave out my boyfriend in high school was the most popular kid in school. He was voted most attractive and best smile.
Oh.
And here I was, just some nerd. And so it was this really weird dynamic, right? I was, let's just get into it. I was the chairperson of the teen abstinence ministry at my church, dating the guy voted most attractive. And then I became a teen mom. I was pregnant at 16.
Okay.
This is something that was, I mentioned that on a podcast about my sales career because it, you know, there are things that you need to be successful as a salesperson, like grit and resilience. and just generally having been through something, I think, that make somebody hanging up on you on a cold call like not scary at all. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, oh, that's the worst it gets. I'm good.
Yeah.
So I think that also has a lot to do with why I am the way I am, why I, you know, can't help myself when it comes to like caring about people. These are weird things to say about yourself because it feels like I'm saying I'm just so kind. But what I'm really am saying is I feel connected. I feel connected with people who have experienced trauma, pain, loss, adversity. And that actually is probably all of us, right? To varying degrees. And so then it just becomes a matter of finding those people and letting them help you and being as much of a help to them as you can. Is this a pageant answer? I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's great. let me piggyback on this here. And thank you for sharing that, Nikki. First of all, I feel you. You know, you came from a different background where it seems like, so a military background, everyone has specific things in place. This is, everything's lined up. They have stuff mapped out. This is where you have to be in a few years. And then all of a sudden you move down to Southeast Georgia, you said? Was it Southeast Georgia? Mm-hmm. Going to high school. Here you are, the smart and intellectual kid who's dating someone who's the most popular dude. And you're like kind of like antisocial, I'd imagine. And it kind of, I can imagine the kind of friction you have. And, you know, us as human beings, we're emotional creatures. We all need each other. We have to be touched. We have to be loved. We have to be connected to have some sort of feeling of belonging. And when that gets taken away from us, whether it's through isolation, loss of a deaf one, loss of a heartbreak, that kind of negative experience will tend to bring a lot of emotional pain. And mm-hmm. I completely understand where you're coming from, especially when you had to make that pivot and go into high school. It's like, wait a minute, I came from this place where they had 1, 2, and 3, you know, everyone has a house, everyone has a car, everyone has money to go out and eat. You come here, it's like, welcome to the hood. You're like,
well, I mean, look, so it wasn't so much that it was the hood. It was actually a pretty nice neighborhood. What I'm identifying that was the shock was the lack of racial and cultural harmony. That's the part that was the shock, right?
Got it. They just didn't care.
Right? It was like not the forefront of their mind. I mean, these are people who have lived in these small towns their whole lives. And so they're used to all of the Black kids sitting at one table in the cafeteria and the white kids sitting at that table and the Asian people and this and this and that, right? They were used to that, but that's what I wasn't used to because everybody sat with everybody where I came from. I understand now how naive it was of me to think that going to Georgia, I was gonna find that same thing. And no shade, Georgia, shout out. But but for me to think that.
We got love for you, Georgia. We got love for you.
We got love. My boy Mortgage Ingram is out there in Atlanta. We can not have love for Morgan. Georgia. But anyway, that's really, really what it was. And I do think a lot of those experiences drive particularly the content that I put out and the work that I do around culture, diversity, and inclusion and all of that.
Wow. You just hit the nail on it. Okay, let me stab at something real quick here. How are we on time, by the way, Nikki? I just want to double check on you. Are we good?
I'm good on time. I know you're probably gonna have to like.
No, I'm still you for a little bit more. You're special. you're special, by the way, Nikki. You're special. You know, I really believe that's probably one of the added success to what you had and what you brought to SDR Defenders, given the fact that you came from a very you were experienced at a very young age of like, hey, we are in fact better together. I'm curious to pick your brain when it came to SDR Defender before you guys got acquired. How are you keeping everyone together with 4,000 sign up? Because that's a lot of heads. It's a lot of heads.
Yeah. Yeah. So we looked at what a lot of the other communities were doing, and most of them were Slack community based.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I, those are fun. I'm in pretty much, you name it, right? I'm in all of those. But it isn't always as easy to break through the noise to get specific recommendations, specific insights, as far as leveling up your career, as far as even just leveling up your performance at your job, right? It's more of coming from a collective, whereas what we decided to do was just lead with the content, right? We were like, do we want to ask these people to come to a whole other Slack group just to interact with us? Or do we just want to get the information and content out there as widely as we possibly can? And then, you know, our members are folks that get our newsletter, are folks that get our content delivered directly to them. And it's content from proven leaders, right? It's content from Kyle Coleman. It's content from me, from Tom Bocard, from Josh Roth. A lot of them even collaborative. So we learn from each other too, right? The SDR Defenders group text is going up, y'all. It's lit. Because it is a place where we all continue to learn from each other. But yes, to answer your question, it's because we decided to take a content-based approach, meaning that we would look on LinkedIn and see what's happening out there in the ether, right? What are people saying to and about SDRs? And what aspects of that do we think in our experience is helpful, productive, you know, or lines up with what we've done to success? And, you know, sometimes it did, but a lot of time it didn't. So the content itself didn't really line up with things that we'd seen be successful, but more importantly, just the tone of the content that other people were putting out more talked at SDRs, or, you know, talked above their, like to their leaders, or it was like some complaint about some email or phone call that they got. And it was for a little while, it was in vogue, right, to trash SDRs. That started to wane as of yet. But so we were like, we don't even have to address that. We're not gonna go on these other people's posts and, you know, get into these back and forths. We're just going to put our heads together and say something like, right, what are 10 questions we think every SDR should ask in an interview? And that was born directly of that first post that I mentioned to you where we even met, right? What should we be asking?
Yeah.
And so we'll put out a piece of content like that. And we had a strategy where each of us would be sharing it on different days. We all have pretty decent sized networks. And that plus the right hashtags meant that the people that we wanted to get the content and information that we were putting out, not to aggrandize ourselves, not to be entertaining even, which I think is cool and there's a place for it, but just to make sure that these folks are getting this. Because you kind of can't take for granted that there is going to be a leader in-house that has the time to be able to give that kind of, you know, drilled down, personalized recommendation on these types of things, right? There is a really intense squeeze that sales managers are under. So that's another thing I like to be clear about, right? It was definitely not a situation where we were like, all the sales leaders are so bad, we need to step in and teach their SDRs. It was actually very opposite than that. It was like, we've been in these situations where, you know, you spend your time as a sales leader, right? Trying to lay an infrastructure to set folks up for success, training folks to set them up for success, and then coaching them on these specific things to your solution. And there often just isn't time for a lot of these other more deeper conversations about sales success. So yeah, we put together a strategy, got the content out there, reached a lot of people, and are now again continuing that with this now being a part of Pavilion.
Oh, damn, girl, for sure. Okay, so just recapping this, right? You guys, different approach. It's the kind that's like, do not follow the crowd. Do not follow what's trending. You guys see what's out there and then strategize, okay, what can we post out that is different that will boost and help, but it doesn't talk through them. It doesn't talk over them or above or under. It talks to them. And one of it was pretty much, you know, hey, this is a few questions you should ask if you're in an interview for an SDR. Okay. You don't have to answer, but just got to pick your brain. You got to side check. Because I know you're real. Okay. What are a few things new SDR and BDR should be asking, Nikki?
Well, I kind of hit on one earlier, right? Which is, you know, how much of the team, right, is what on average, what percentage of the team is attaining quota? And you can tell a lot from, you know, it's not just the number that they give you. Again, it's how they answer the question. What tone? How do they talk about the existing salespeople? Because these are people that they hired. And if they're so quick to throw people that they hired under the bus and not take ownership of the fact, not take ownership of the fact that it is up to them. It is their job to help these people when they get off track. Now, I'm not saying that if a person goes, you know, an entire quarter, shows no promise, isn't hitting quota, that you should keep that person and continue to pour into them. What I'm saying is you have to recognize that the onus lies with both the seller and the leader when it comes to things like that. So first you're just asking to see how they answer the question. The follow-up question that I always ask, and I think I mentioned it earlier, is, you know, nobody's perfect. Derek Jeter has slumps, you feel me? So if I'm in a slump and I need your help, you know, what does that look like? What are the types of things that you would be able to do if I was having a hard time hitting quota? I want to hear, you know, that they have a process in place, even if they're telling me, right, you'd get a verbal warning and then we'd put together a performance improvement plan and then we'd evaluate and then it either makes sense for you to stay or makes sense for you to leave. Give me that. That's fine. You know, it would be even better though to say, we would have a conversation to try and figure out if what's holding you back is happening in your mind. Is it a mentality thing? Is it a just motivation thing, emotional thing? You're not into it, you know, or are there skill gaps, right, that I can help you with? So if they answer it that way, now I know I have someone who is at least capable and willing to invest in me as an individual, who cares about whether or not I get better at this job. I'm not just a warm body making phone calls. So those are the major ones that I would ask. An interesting thing, when we put out that document about, you know, 10 questions folks should ask, I left out a question about diversity. And that was a piece of feedback that we got. People were like, why isn't, you know, asking about culture, asking about diversity and inclusion in a part of these questions? And it's a fair criticism. And then I had to do some, you know, some self-evaluation, like, look, I didn't put that on this list because I was afraid in my own interviews that if I asked that question, those kinds of questions, I would be labeled as a troublemaker, deemed not worth the risk, and I would lose the opportunity. Right?
Oh, wow.
I understand now that if I lost an opportunity based on that, then it was, they did me a favor.
Yeah.
So now in retrospect, that's absolutely one of the questions you have to ask, but you have to get beyond just asking, you know, what's the culture like here? Or how important is diversity and inclusion here? Because people are going to give you a canned answer. They're going to give you what you want to hear. No one's going to say it's not important at all. So you have to dig a little bit deeper and ask the question in a very pointed way. Who is responsible? Who is responsible for building an inclusive culture here? That's the kind of question you have to ask people. You have to ask people, what are you doing to attract a more diverse set of candidates?
Yes.
You have to ask them these questions because that is how you know. And it doesn't mean, right, I'm not saying this is not a gotcha test. this is, again, the same way that other set of questions functioned. This is to try and understand just their attitudes toward these things. So the answer, it's okay for the answer to be, right? We don't have that figured out. It's something that's important to us. We are actively hiring for, you know, this. We've tried this program and that, you know, we are looking for people to add to our culture, and it's something that is on an ongoing effort. Like, I'll accept that. But just, you know, well, we don't get a lot of people, a lot of diverse candidates apply, or that's a good question. Or, you know, you feel me? Like, don't let them jerk you around when it comes to that, because especially in, like, you guys have to understand, any SDR, any person that is listening to this podcast, you are in demand, okay? So you have every right and responsibility to vet these organizations, if you can, if you're able, vet these organizations as rigorously as they would vet you. You have to, because what these organizations know is that they are in an all-out dogfight for elite talent. So they have to be better. They have to be better than they've ever been at supporting talent, at supporting people's careers. So let them know from the beginning, right, that that's what you want. Throw their questions back in their face, where you want to be in 5 years. Okay, tell them, and then say, can you help me do that? Are there programs and opportunities in place here where I'd be able to do that here?
Yeah.
Now they gotta tell you something, you know.
There you go.
They know that if they're not being held accountable or holding themselves accountable that way, especially like you're talking about, say, the Austin Tech startup scene, where there's like a lot of folks, you know, in this fight for talent, or you're talking about, you know, Silicon Valley and all of these, right? Everybody is trying to get the talent. So we have every right and responsibility to hold these folks accountable.
Oh, woo. Nikki, if that wasn't a price of admission, I don't know what is. You know what I really, really, really love? You as a sales development leader, a revenue growth leader, you practice what you preach. And I can just see it right there and see the resemblance in your eyes and excitement. And I thought I was interviewing you for SDR roles. No, but what I really love is the fact that when you're asking them these type of questions, you're not looking really to see what they're going to say back, but you're really trying to feel them out in terms of their response, in terms of tonability, and how much do they really care, and really, are they going to be a true leader and accept and eat up rather than just throwing them down under the bus? And that is a huge, huge, huge key indicator.
Listen, because by the way, that's what they're asking their questions for in most times, right? They're asking questions around like, when was a time, or talk about, you know, the last time you didn't hit quota, how you handled it. Yeah. Yes, they care about the actual answer, but more than that, they care about the level of vulnerability that you're able to demonstrate in your answer. I can tell you, I walked out. I had this person just go ahead and leave my interview room, because I asked about that, right? I asked, like, when you're not having your best month, right? How have you overcome that? Do you know this person sat across from me and said, he's never missed quota. I don't have bad months. I was like, okay, sir. Well, shit. I do. Yeah. So, you know what I mean? And shit. So I'm like, oh, thank you. I think they made him and let him go. So again, so everybody's doing it. Everybody is just trying to figure out where everybody's coming from. Increasingly so, now that we're remote, I think that we've all gotten used to literally being in each other's homes, right? This is my home that you're in right now. Phones and stuff. And
go.
And forging more, is personal the right word? Maybe it is. More meaningful interactions with each other. And so I think all the questions these days are getting at that, because the rest of it, right? How much did you sell? What, you know, how often did you hit quota last time, right? you can find that stuff out, right?
Yeah.
When you reference check, you can find that stuff out, you know, on their LinkedIn. So everything's deeper now.
Totally, totally. One quick question. So, you know, this is kind of, sometimes I feel bad for the new SDR and BDRs too. Like their mentality is kind of like, you know what, Nikki, I've been applying. It's really hard for me to get an offer. And when I do, this offer's a piece of shit. It's not where I really want to be. It's not who I want to really work for, but I gotta just get my foot in the door. What are a few things they can do to take a step back and not have to take that route?
I'd say if you are in the market right now for an SDR job and you're not in a situation where you feel like you just have to take something, meaning like all your life is going to get shut off next month unless you get a paycheck coming in, right? Barring that type of, and I've been there, barring that type of situation, right? If unless that's the case, dream big. Like, don't tell yourself, I have to take, you know, whatever job I can get my foot in the door at, right? I can't apply to the gongs, the outreaches, and you know, all of that because I'm just new. Don't do that to yourself. All you need to do is just get more creative about the way that you reach out. So, but taking a step back, right? To avoid the types of things that you talked about, right? You mentioned you show up, the product doesn't really have a good market fit and you realize that right away. But now you're in this job and you don't want another short stint, or again, you need a steady income. So to avoid that, really allow yourself to pick an industry of buyers that you can care about, a space that you can care about. That for me made it like took away at least 50% of the difficulty I might have in selling something or enjoying myself in a sales role, right? Case in point, I guess to be more specific, I was selling to construction subcontractors. They don't really respond to me very well. So,
you're that Nikki girl, right?
It wasn't personal. It was just like, I'm talking to people who are, they're small business owners. They're out here. They're on like roofs and stuff, like actually doing the work.
Oh.
And I'm like popping in like, hey, I got this software you might want. It wasn't on them. It was me. I did not understand how important it is.
You're that Nikki girl, right? With the software.
Yeah, they weren't exactly waiting for my call, right? Another place I worked at, you know, they're super successful now, but at the time when I joined, the market hadn't caught up. We were still selling against inertia, right? Mm. So some people are really good at that and that feeds their soul. And if you do want to do that, right, creating the category, disrupting and all of that, and talking to buyers who've been on the same software since the 90s. I wish I was exaggerating, but since the 90s, on premise since the 90s. So
if
you're up for that,
yeah,
then do that. But if you decide, right, I want my days to be filled having conversations with salespeople about how to do their jobs better. If you decide that, you do yourself a disservice not pursuing jobs in that industry.
Mm.
You have to do that. If I care about employee experience or I care about workplace culture, I have to pursue jobs in that industry, because the more interested I am in that industry, right, then the more I'm going to proactively read the same things that my potential buyers are reading, show up to the webinars that they're showing up to, right? Subscribe to their content streams. And when I do that, now I'm having more informed, intelligent conversations. And again, the lift as a salesperson of getting them to believe that you know and care about the problems that they're solving for, even the problems that your solution doesn't solve for, getting to that place sets you apart from your counterparts very quickly. But it's something that a lot of folks, I think mostly because some people can't, like we talked about, they don't feel like they can afford to do that. So they're like, I just want to break into tech. Oh, you're selling to CFOs? Sign me up. But they don't know anything about the financial services industry. And now they learn all these things about an industry that they're not passionate about, only to what? Have to start over again and now learn another industry? Like, that's cool. I've done it. People do it every day. But if you're just starting out and you have a chance to start off on a better footing, do that. Another reason why, and I think we can, you know, maybe segue into this, but another reason why that's important is because it's becoming increasingly just a part of the table stake skill set for SDRs to have some type of inclination toward content, toward social or building a brand. It's incredibly difficult to build a brand if what we know is most of the people in your network, right, happen to be other salespeople, but you sell to construction workers. You can't come on LinkedIn with content about construction workers to your audience of salespeople any more than you could come talk about salespeople or sales tactics to construction workers. They don't care. So figure out, again, what you're really passionate about, what you like talking about and working on, and find some commonality between those two, right? You'll see on my LinkedIn, it says, meet me at the corner of career and culture, and my love of alliteration aside.
Yeah.
The reason why that is what it is because I want people to know right away, right? That's what I'm about. I'm going to be talking about career, as in how to break into tech sales, how to level up in that career, what all the different career paths can be for a salesperson into other parts of a business. And I'm going to be talking about what experiences those people are having in the workplace in terms of culture and in terms of inclusion. Now, it took me going through what I went through in COVID to understand what that cross-section is for me in terms of brand. But if I had it to do over, right? I would take that path from the beginning, right? Like Morgan J. Ingram, it's a parallel path, right? He is selling sales training and he is sales training in his content. Same thing for someone like Sarah Brazier, right? She's selling to salespeople and she's putting out content that appeals to salespeople. So she's able to build a brand and a business, right? Successfully.
Yeah.
At the same time. So like, these are the types of opportunities that I would look for if you have the opportunity to start out in sales right now. I think it's one of the best times in the history of the profession to be starting out as a salesperson, despite all the things you might see on LinkedIn about how terrible a job SDR is, right? Yes, it's difficult. It is. Ain't no two ways about it. But it is the place from which the stakes are super low, right? It's not like you're the CEO and your decisions could tank the whole company. It's not that serious, right? You are there as an SDR to learn skills that you can apply in the next role in terms of communication skills, in terms of the skills of writing copy, in terms of developing an executive presence, in case you're like selling to the C-suite. You're there to do that. And you should let yourself get excited about that and be more excited about that than you are upset about the rejection, which, yes, is easier said than done and takes a lot of practice. But trust me, it can happen and it's worth it.
There it is. Oh, shit. That's under your fire. Oh, shit. Hell yeah. No, that was what I was looking for. You just crushed it. Personal branding, alignment, and you know that's one of the worst thing you ever can do, right? Is be successful at the wrong thing. Hey, look, this guy's pumping content about construction, but yet he's selling other stuff. Well, he's selling to e-commerce. It just doesn't make sense.
It's a pitfall, I think. But look, right? If you're a salesperson, you just came into the game. Right? Like you just graduated from, am I allowed to say like names of companies? You graduated from Flock, you graduated from Aspireship, right? Yeah. And you graduated from SDR Acceleration School at Pavilion. You graduate from one of these, and you know, and you're ready to go out there. I think the mistake a lot of folks make is like, oh, I look up to Scott Leese and Scott Leese is talking about sales. I look up to Larry Long and he's talking about sales. I look up to KD and he's talking about sales. So you want to be, you want to emulate what your, you know, your heroes, your sales heroes are doing. But again, you have to keep in mind, those people are talking about sales because sales is their business. So just try really hard to avoid that pitfall and just find your place in the space. Don't be afraid to be a salesperson talking about financial services. Don't be afraid to be a salesperson talking about, you know, what you do in healthcare tech. Ellis Stone is someone who's a really good example of that, who does a balance of that, right? So he has these motivational videos that he puts up, but then he also talks about how, on an emotional level, the work that he's doing in the healthcare space, right? How that affects him, how that motivates him, what he draws from that in terms of, you know, strength and inspiration. So it can be done, but you just have to have the right examples.
There it is. There it is. You got to find that, you know, magical twist, that fine balance that in together, it aligns with each other, and you add two of it at once and you create something special, something that is magically out.
Nice. You're doing it, by the way, Jackson. You're doing it.
Thanks, Dee. I learned from you. One love, baby. Nikki, before we end this here, there's one more topic I want to pick on, if that's all right with you. And I think this is something that is kind of underspoken about topic. Not a lot of people like to talk about it. We see it every day, but some people just kind of brush it under the rug. And I had my fair share of experience, especially when starting out, just interviewing, being the only Asian American in there, the only one, and the only one that's experienced, only to get shot down to the others that, and losing offers to others who had no experience at all. But the only thing I can see difference between it is that, you know, they're different color, you know, minority, whatever. In your bio, quote unquote, in a sales career that spans more than a decade, I've been the only Black woman on a team 99% of the time, quote unquote. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, it's true. Only that comes to mind right now, my very first job in B2B tech. So at a company called Outbound Engine back in 2014, I believe. I was not the only, but besides that, yeah. There's been other teams where I was not the only Black person, but I find that Black women are even more rare in this industry. It just is what it is. Yeah. That's the truth. In all of tech, right? Especially if we're talking about B2B tech, in all of tech, across functions, right? Whether you're talking about engineering, marketing, Black people make up 7% in all of tech. So it's no wonder, right, that I've been the only one, because there's really here. And I think that there's two parts of this that I could talk about, right? I could talk about what organizations could do to fix that. I've done a lot of talking about that, though, in the past year and a half. And I think that where I'm at right now is I'm past the educating people, I'm past the let's build awareness, and I'm at the let's hold people accountable. So I'll leave that part where it is, but I can talk about how I emotionally deal with that. And I really didn't deal with it well until this experience I had beginning of COVID. Before anybody knew that, like, COVID was gonna be what it was. So it was like the last in-person conference that I went to. I forget, I had like a free code to show up at this conference, and I'd never been to one here in Florida. Anyway, I had looked at the list of speakers, and you know, it wasn't that diverse, but I was like, okay, fine. it never occurred to me to look at the attendees, right? Or if that was even possible. So I show up. I am the only Black person in attendance.
Oh,
and there is, yeah, and there is one Black person that was one of the speakers, right? Now that alone, I'm fine. Like I spend a lot of time around white people in my life, right? So
don't get me wrong. We love white people. Yeah.
This is my husband. Maybe y'all can see. He's so white, you can barely see it. Okay, that's
All right. Put up with the beard going on.
Hashtag swore life. It's not that I'm uncomfortable in those settings. It's not. I just would get so frustrated. Like, why though? Right. And it does sometimes make me second guess whether or not I should go into the room. And then someone asked me this question. They were like, Nikki, yes, you were the only Black woman in the room. But what would happen if you weren't in the room? Well, shit. Then there'd be no Black people in the room. Oh, and that, yeah. So that's the choice I have to make. Do I want to, is being the only worse than there being none? Of course not. Of course not. And then I started to take that a little bit further and think about, well, you know, does being in the room set me up to be able to then invite more diversity into the room? Yes, it does. And even in situations, here's where I've recently arrived, right? Even in situations where there isn't somebody in the next role that I want to be in who looks like me, right? There's women, but there's not a lot of Black women, like I said. So there's not another Black, I'm a director of sales now, I want to be a VP of sales. And let's say at my organization or in my immediate sort of sphere of influence, there is not another Black woman who's a VP of sales.
Yeah.
Right? That is difficult at first. And then I started to realize I'm that person. I'm that pipeline. If I get this right and I, you know, stay strong, I don't let anybody knock me off, you know, what I'm trying to do, then I will be that Black female VP of sales. And then this SDR that just graduated from SDR Acceleration School at Pavilion, they see that, and now they do have an example. And the person that came after me in that director of sales role, who happens to be an Asian woman, right? Or Puerto Rican woman, or whatever it is, right? All of us are seeing ourselves as this pipeline now. I want every single SDR, right? No matter what your background is, no matter what your, you know, your racial composition is, any of that. And no matter who else you've seen in the role that you want, if you don't see somebody that looks like you, it's you. Take that attitude. It's you. You are that pipeline.
Yes.
And I promise you won't go wrong. They will come to you. They will doubt you. They will question your expertise. It will happen. But what you will know is you're putting it into that. Your success means that the people coming after you won't have to have their expertise questioned. They won't have to be excluded. They won't have to be microaggressed against, you know, with impunity, the way that maybe you had been. So that's how I'm dealing with it, right? I'm not in this place where it's like, you know, I need to teach people who are different from me how to get along with me. Honey, you never have to get along with me. I'm so sorry. Like, I love people, but I'm not beholden to them if they're not investing in me.
Yeah.
So
it's a give and take world. Win-win.
It is a give and take world. I invest in that. Scott Lee's one of the most recent pieces of advice he gave me. Invest in people that invest in you. And it really is that simple a lot of the time.
Yep.
You know, and KD is the one that set me on the, you know, the be the pipeline path. You know, we were talking after we did a webinar. I think it was like at Thursday Night Sales, or maybe a very special episode of Serpent Sales, where we talked about a lot of the social unrest, right, behind the death of George Floyd last year and all of these things. And I got a little hot. And so KD, after that conversation, he was like, look, man, I know you're mad, but keep your eye on the prize.
That's right.
Right? People are looking up to you. I know that maybe, right, you didn't know that you're the person, right, as far as one of the most visible Black female sales leaders, right now in the industry. And he just said it to me. He looked in the, we were on a Zoom call. He looked me in the face, into the camera, and said, it's you, Nikki, it's you. And it was like, damn. Oh, it's, there it is. Never occurred to me. I'd spent so much time, right? I'm a looker up or two. Like I have heroes, right? I'd spent so much time thinking, right? If I'm going to be ultimately successful, or my ultimate picture of success means I need to grow up and be Scott Lee someday. I need to grow up and be KD. I need to grow up and be, you know, Lori Richardson, right? All people who I respect and admire. But he was telling me, like, you are grown and you are you, and you are who they think you are. So just be it.
There it is. There it is.
SDRs, you are who you think you are.
There it is.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I love that. That is a huge aha moment right there, because there's a lot of people, and just myself included, right? We're especially where you're at, you're the pioneer, you're the first of its kind. You're the leader, the one who's setting up the example to take all the hits that's bound to come to you. But overall, later down, it's going to come back with so much reward, where this new generation, you're setting up success for the new generation so that they won't have to take this hit, because you took it for them. And that's what a leader does.
You know what you'll do? You'll discover that you were probably not the only one all along. You might have been the only one in that room or at that job, but about 2-3 years ago, I searched on LinkedIn Black women in sales. That is how I found Sisters in Sales, right? I have to give credit where it's due, right? Chantel George has been on this for a long time. She has been on this for a very long time. Way predates me. A wonderful woman. She happened to be in Austin the week that I found Sisters in Sales on LinkedIn and joined their community on Slack. And she was headed to catch a flight and agreed to sit with me for 10 minutes with her luggage bear with her at a restaurant, you know, just to have coffee and ask me how she could help me. So I found community by questioning whether or not, you know, Black women are making moves in sales, and we absolutely are. And then I found Cynthia Barnes, right, who built National Association of Women Sales Pros. I found Liz J. Simpson, who is a top voice on LinkedIn as far as entrepreneurs, right? So there are these women out there, and thank you for giving me my flowers, but I have to give credit where it's due. All of them have been doing this way before me. They maybe just hadn't quite been as visible as I was starting out. But now, we're all out here getting it.
Yeah, girl, oh, yeah.
I forgot. Chantel Blackwell, Gabrielle Blackwell, like, we out here, I can't even name them all.
Yes.
And that's the pipeline that I'm talking about, right? Right now, Gabrielle Blackwell is, you know, leading sales development at Gong. There's no reason why she won't be heading somebody's entire sales team in the next couple of years. There's no reason why. I say that for all of us. We are the pipeline. Jackson, you are the pipeline, my guy.
Oh, damn, girl, I appreciate it. Thank you for that. This is your show, though. It's not my show. No, I appreciate that, because I'm not gonna lie, had a few chats with other Asian American tech. We feel the same way. We're like, god damn. But you know, probably not having it worse as you guys, not to throw stuff like that out there, you know. But
no, hey. I mean, I think, listen, nobody has a monopoly on pain, right? We all experience racial trauma in different ways for different reasons, right?
Yeah.
But I don't come from this place that's like, well, you don't have it as bad as Black, even if it's not untrue, right? That like Black women have pretty bad. I, as a Black woman, am not as in danger as, say, trans Black women. Yeah. So there's always somebody else, you know, it's all relative. So speak to your experience. I would love to hear more from you and other people who are Asian Americans in sales, or Pacific Islanders in sales, right? Or Hispanics in sales, talking about their particular experiences. And I think what we'll find, Jackson, is that there's so much overlap. There is so much that we can help each other heal from, so much that we can help each other accomplish once we really just start putting it out there, be vulnerable, talk about what we're going through, and then find all of my posts, by the way, they're homing beacons. I was telling this to Scalise the other day. I was like, sometimes I'll use a song lyric in a LinkedIn post just to see who it attracts. And the people it attracts, those are my people.
Yeah.
So if you post something about your experience.
Hey, the love of underdogs on top. We can shine,
find,
baby.
Yeah, find your people. One of my favorites to quote, I tweet it like once a month, right? It's a 50 cent. I've been hit with a few shells, but I don't walk with a limp.
Yeah.
Because it like sums up my life right now. I've been through some stuff, but I'm still cute out here though. No, I've been through some stuff, but I'm still standing. And so
straight
things
glow.
Like that.
Hashtag glow.
Sort of like if you know type beat. So I want to see that. There are parts of your culture, I'm guessing, that people who are in your culture, certain phrases, right, that you could say or talk or things you could talk about, the people who've had that same experience would right away recognize. It would resonate with them. And then that's how you'll find, where are the other Asian American salespeople? Oh, they're out here. Oh, they're listening. They're having these experiences. That's how we do it.
That's how we do it. Yes. You know, it's funny. I just got to throw it out there. I was, long story short, I was just doing like some side headhunting on the side, like 10-9 stuff, right? And I interviewed this girl. She was Asian American. She was an SDR manager. And I didn't realize that it was really her because, I called her and then I hopped on and she called back. I was like, hey, yeah, you know, we talked. And after I reviewed the profile, I was like, so it's a Vietnamese phrase, Asian phrase, right? We're like, it's called a do. It means like, oh, damn. But that's like the Asian phrase. And I said that, it just broke the ice barrier. She's like, all laughing, the smiling emoji. She's like, oh, snap, you know that. And that just popped in my head. So I just stopped there.
Love it. That's funny. Stuff.
Nikki, God, hold up. So before we end this right here real quick, I just want to say something. You know, you are bold, you are strong, you are forward, and on behalf of the Asian Americans in the sales development community, we support you.
I appreciate that. It goes both ways. It is so mutual. Get at me. I'm trying to help anybody.
One love.
All of us. You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, right, whatever the vision is for what this industry ends up looking like, or for what this country ends up deciding its identity is. Whatever it is, I want all of us to be there for it. So we don't have to agree on any of the nuances. We don't have to have everything in common. We just all have to agree that we all want to be there to enjoy the vision. And we need to let that dictate how we behave, how we proceed. Because if we all want to be there,
bam.
I can't be an asshole to you. If we all want to be there, I can't do things that act, you know, against your, you know, the interests of people who look like you. I can't do that if I want us to all be there. So that's the frame. That's how I think about it.
Yeah, love it. Love it. There you go. Heart back. Okay. So Nikki, final question before we wrap up here. So if there's a brand new rep right now, SDR, BDR, she's a person of color. She just got hired. Awesome tech companies got funded. Great team, great culture, great leaders. There's 5 reps, but she's the only person of color. And she's kind of get this feeling like, is this, are you really doing diversity? Or what are some advice would you have for her to stay strong, push forward, but more importantly, let the team know that, hey, look, can we push for more diversity here? What advice would you have for that person?
A tough question, because I have thoughts about whose responsibility it is, right? So number one, I would say, dear 2014 Shaniqua, I would say, don't do the job that your leaders are supposed to do. you can point them in the right direction, but don't have them, you know, don't let them have you starting an ERG for free that they don't actually fund or put any money behind. Don't do that. I would go straight to the, if you happen to have a diversity leader at your company, which is really, really lucky, I would go to that person and I would say, you know, I know that this is important to you. It's also important to me. What types of things are we working on right now to A, attract more diverse talent, and to B, make sure that everyone here feels, you know, like they have access to a sense of belonging? That professional will be interested in helping you. And it will help them because they're probably trying to get programs and initiatives funded as well. It will help them to be able to say, right, to their peers in the C-suite or their peers in the executive meetings, that this is not just something that I'm, you know, intellectualizing and I want to do this program. Our team is asking for it. So go be an ally with that person for change. If it's not a diversity leader and it just happens to be an HR leader, whoever in the building that has to do with that, that has to do with, you know, people ops, meet that person, link arms with them, and have them be the ones leading that charge, but with your support. Now, with respect to how you interact with your peers, don't shrink.
That's not weak.
Don't shrink. I'm gonna tell you, here's what I mean, right? So you all know I go by Nikki. My mom calls me Nikki. Everybody in my personal life calls me Nikki. My dad named me Shaniqua. He said he named me after the second prettiest woman in the Hilltop Housing Project, because of course my mom was the prettiest. But anyway, Shaniqua, sounds like an African princess, he used to say to me. Anyway,
yeah, Shaniqua
wasn't getting called back on the resume though, right? People weren't really calling Shaniqua back. So I started putting Nikki on my resumes and lo and behold. So that put me in a situation where at a job, right, somebody would see, you know, it's my first check, so it's a paper check or something, and it's on my desk and it says Shaniqua. A coworker would be like, who's Shaniqua? I thought your name was Nikki. And then like cue all of the jokes about the name Shaniqua, right? It's so ghetto, or, you know, they're making fun and doing all these. Now, in the beginning, right, I did shrink. Sometimes, shamefully, uncomfortably, laughed along to those jokes. I didn't feel like I didn't know what support I had, right? Or, you know, there was this guy that would always show me, like, he liked to show me Vine videos, but it was always like Vine videos of like Black people doing funny stuff. He never showed anybody else those Vine videos. You know, or I would walk in with like a red pair of shoes on and he'd start like rapping Cardi B, like, oh, these are body shoes. And I'm like, not even what I mean. But anyway.
But you make money moves.
I would be quiet because I didn't want to make them uncomfortable. I was embarrassed for them. I was internalizing what they should have been embarrassed about. And I was embarrassed for them. So I didn't want to say anything that would make them understand how embarrassed they should be. It is something that I think, I'm looking at you, Jackson. I hope you haven't gone through this, but I guess you have. I'm guessing
you have.
Oh
yeah, been through it.
We learned this from a very young age, right?
Yeah.
About navigating in white spaces. Because frankly, for Black people, and I'm certain for Asian folks, it can be dangerous to make white people uncomfortable. Probably not at the workplace, right? Not physically dangerous, but the idea that if I rock the boat, if I push back, I will then be excluded from activities that might give me access to senior leadership, right? Because now I'm scary Nikki. You can't say anything like that around Nikki. You can't be on yourself. You have to be on eggshells. You know, those were the types of things that were the most difficult. And once I stopped shrinking myself, everything got, I just started to lean into it. Somebody's like, oh, is that your real hair? I'm like, girl, you know this is the wig.
Be real.
You know what I love? I love words, wigs, and women in charge. I lean into that. So now you can't make me small because of it. You know what I mean? And if you say something to me that is a microaggression that you should be embarrassed about, I'm just going to tilt my head and curiously ask you, why would you say that? So I haven't made it a confrontation, but I haven't swallowed all of the shame and discomfort from that experience. That is what I would do if I had it to do over. And that is what I hope every Shaniqua, Lakeisha, LaShonda, you know what I'm saying? The people with last names from Lou to Gutierrez, you feel me? Like, don't shrink. It will be your superpower.
That's right. That's right. Love that, Nikki. RIP DMX too, by the way. RIP. DMX, baby. No, I was thinking your name now is like one of the songs, right? Like, when the girls want
to run Lisa.
RIP DMX.
Chill.
Oh, Nikki, this has been a vibe. Mad love, respect for all you've done, what you're currently doing right now. Congratulations on getting acquired by Pavilion. That is some huge news. Last round of applause there for you. If there's anyone out here who would like to reach out to you and say thank you and just connect with you, what's the best way to do so? And if there's anyone you'd like to give a shout out to, please do so.
Okay. So I can best be reached. I'm on LinkedIn, so you have a good shot of catching me online there, but can be kind of noisy in my LinkedIn inbox. So I have an email address. It is ShaniquaIvy@gmail.com. That is the least noisy inbox that I have. Now it's not going to be. I told you guys.
That's right.
There's the least noisy inbox that I have. And I would actually like my shout out. I want to give my shout out to the organization that I just started working for. I'm the director of sales at a company called Assembly. Assembly was born out of COVID-19, right? So there are these restaurants in Austin with celebrity chefs. There's a chef, Philip Spear. The restaurant is called Comador. And of course, during COVID, we weren't allowed to gather. So they thought, how do we bring this experience, not just the food, but this experience, the ambiance, the sizzle, how do we bring this to people? And that's the iteration that we are in right now. So it's live experiences, upscale culinary experiences for team building. Right now we're doing a big push for people to book their, you know, holiday events or events around Hispanic Heritage Month, whatever it is. We're running specials and I want you all to get it. So call at your girl.
There you go.
Assembly.
All right. Nikki, thanks again so much for hopping on to 1UP Sales Development Podcast. We truly appreciate you.
Thank you. This was so much fun.